Welcome to Lesbians Who Write with Claire Lydon and T.B. Markinson. Conversations about writing and lesbian fiction. Join us as we draw back the curtain on the writer's life.
Hello and welcome to episode 19 of Lesbians Who Write. And this week we are talking about lesbian fiction book covers. And that's going to be a big topic to cover. But here, as always, to hold your hand all the way through it, is me, Claire Lydon, and the especially easy T.B. Markinson. How are you today, T.B.?
In what way did you mean easy? Are you trying to give me a reputation I haven't earned on my own?
I'm trying to make you a bit more edgy. There you go, edgy. There's another one. The easy and edgy T.B. Markinson.
It's better than the first E word that popped in my head was elephant. So I apparently am at the grade school level of the alphabet words.
Elephant. What's F? What's F in those picture books?
Frank. I don't know. That's the first one that came to my mind.
I'm thinking it's probably Fox. We've got F all sorted out already. The Frankly
Fox.
The Frankly Foxy. Oh, we should actually say that we are recording this straight after episode 18 because one of us is out of town next week, so we're getting ahead of ourselves. So when I'm going to ask TB how she is today, I know because I've just spoken to her 5 minutes ago. We did have a break to go to the loo, make a cup of tea. But anything exciting happened in the last 15 minutes, TB?
No, I still have my cold.
You do. You still have your cold, but you're fighting through because that's the kind of trooper you are. So we don't have any comments, do we?
No, but I did prepare something for this little bit of a segment.
Right, we'll take it
away. So, this coming Sunday, I will be speaking at the Northeast chapter of RWA, and I will be presenting as the owner of I Heart Lesbic, and I'm going to be talking about how it helps to collaborate with other authors within your genre. And so when I was doing some research for my topic, I decided to check out BookBub's selection every day for so far of the month of June, because this is Pride Month. We just released our Pride episode on Monday. Was that yesterday? Was Monday yesterday? Jeez. It's been a long week. So I was curious. So far this month, there's been 18 days, but they don't have an LGBT. Sorry, I didn't mean to leave the G out. They don't have that category on Saturday, so we already had to toss out 3 days. So out of the 15 days on BookBub, there's been one drag memoir, one drag literary fiction, one trans memoir, one general history on gays, one male instructional, The Joy of Gay Sex, 3 male memoirs, 5 male-to-male romances. And out of the 15 available days in Pride Month, there has been only one female memoir book on BookBub.
Hmm.
Where's the representation for lesbian fiction, BookBub? It is Pride.
I think we should write to them and point this out, actually. I've actually got the email from one of the women who's quite high up, because I've spoken to her at a conference, so I might write to her and say, hey lady. Where's the ladies?
I mean, it's great that they included a female memoir, but 1 out of 15? That is, I was a bit surprised by that, to be honest. And I'm not sure what's up.
So where are they including this? So BookBub, we should say it for people that don't know, is a service that promotes discounted books every day. And you can pick the genre you're interested in, and they'll send you an email with like, books generally discounted to free or 99p 99 cents. So if you tick the LGBT box, you'll get an email about discounted books. And I would say generally they're probably what, about 3 to 1 4 to 1 weighted in favor of gay fiction over lesbian fiction. Is that about right?
I've only really looked at this month because I was just prepping for this talk, and I started noticing this a few months ago, because I look forward to the BookBub email every day. I am an avid reader, so, and I open it up and I am always curious Obviously, since I do also write books, I'm always curious what the competition is like. For a while, they were doing pretty decently with lesbian fiction or lesbian memoirs. But I started noticing a drop-off over the past maybe 6 to 8 weeks. And so I started paying more attention for Pride Month. Because I was like, well, surely they'll try and up their game a bit and be a little fair. I mean, there's a lot to choose from. And I was also hearing on Facebook groups, I was hearing in Facebook groups, that a lot of lesbian authors were getting denied. But I'm just really shocked with Pride Month that they couldn't try and even it out, or not even it out, but just play a little more fairly. Mm-hmm. Is that the right way? Am I using the right phrasing there?
Fairly's a word, so I think you're fairly frankly, Foxy, okay.
Wow!
Thank you. I'm here all day. I am a reader of gay fiction as well, so, and I'm happy with a lot of lesbian romance or lesbian fiction readers and writers get a little bit cheesed off with the ratio of lesbian fiction in the LGBT section. But, you know, gay fiction is a bigger market and there's more of it, I think. So it kind of makes sense that there would be more of it, would be more weighted towards them. It kind of makes sense because it's a bigger market and more books. However, I do think that for Pride Month, there should be, the representation should be equal. That's very disappointing. But good luck with your talk this week. I hope it goes well. And also, talking about ice cream, which we weren't, the next ice cream that I'm going to reveal from my upcoming novel, A Taste of Love, where the leading lady owns an ice cream shop. So one of the next ice creams that I would like to see on a menu, everyone, is marshmallow.
Just marshmallow? You look so pleased, and I'm like, just marshmallow. Like, no chocolate or no, like, marshmallow swirl, just marshmallow?
I'm imagining that there might be bits of marshmallow in it, and it'll have a marshmallow flavour. And, you know, my ice cream shop that the lady's running, it's a modern one. So, you know, there's a whole bench of stuff, of shizzle, you can add to your own ice cream, like sprinkles and sauces and accoutrement, biscuity bits. So you can pimp your ice cream to your heart's content. But no, I think simplicity is key when it comes to ice cream. For instance, coconut is just coconut. I like coconut ice cream. However, if you were to add honeycomb, it would be the bomb.
I'm still confused by this honeycomb. Still not understanding honeycomb.
Honeycomb, apparently, according to Google, when I Googled it after we spoke last, is a cinder toffee or hokey pokey. Any closer?
That's still not registry, but it's not a big surprise. I am not known for my skills in the kitchen or for knowing spices or anything like that. So, you know, maybe I'm just the odd American who has no idea what honeycomb is.
So can we just go back to this week's flavor of marshmallow? Does that get the thumbs up or the thumbs down?
Well, if I can put it in, like, chocolate ice cream, yeah, I would do that. But if it's just, like, marshmallow flavor, that's, like, just, why don't you just eat a marshmallow?
I don't think you should ever come to the ice cream shop, but if I ever open one.
Well, that's really just mean.
You should never come, because, you know, you would walk out in disgust, frankly. I did save a couple of things to chat about on this section from the last podcast, because yesterday was, you know, an amazing day. Not only did I go to the Society of Authors thing and say hi to Sarah, me, my best mate Sarah, but during the day, my wife and I went sofa shopping. So that was very exciting. Yes, we haven't bought a new sofa. Have you ever been sofa shopping?
Many a times, yes. Oh, okay. It's not, I don't personally enjoy it because I have zero style.
Well, I don't think I've ever really done it in earnest, so I quite enjoyed it. We went around quite a lot of different shops, sat on a lot of sofas, and contemplated spending quite a lot of money. But the other thing I did yesterday as well, I went bra shopping.
Oh, did you have one of those helpers to, like, make sure you're getting the right size and the right fit and, like, squeeze them all in?
Yeah. And I learned something new, and I didn't think that you could learn that. You know, I've been wearing a bra for quite a long time, quite a few years, and it turns out I've been doing it all wrong all these years. Because do you know what I learned yesterday? I learned that you have to center your nipple.
Wait, what?
Did you know this?
Did I just lose, voice. I don't know about the centering of nipple in a bra.
So the woman was saying to me, she said, do you want to reach in there, madam, and just centre your nipple, because it does make a difference. I said, okay.
Do you get like a ruler out and be like, okay, you know, a couple of inches on this side, a couple of inches on that side.
Wouldn't that have been great if she'd done that? But I do go to this. So basically, I'm quite picky about my bras. I don't just go to Marks and Spencer's and get one. I like to be properly fitted in a nice shop. So I go to Rigby and Pella, which is a very posh bra shop. It's where the Queen gets her bras. It's the Royal Bra Shop. And I go to the shop in Mayfair. So, and it's very she. My wife came with me and she got to sit in a very plush waiting room with, she was offered tea, we were offered tea coffee, we were offered water, just plain water or water with lemon in it. There was homemade shortbread biscuits to eat while you waited. And then you got shown into a very, very big plush changing room. And then a woman fits you by sight. I know, it's like some kind of magic changing room. So at no point is there a measuring your breasts or your back or anything. She just looks at you and she goes, mm-hmm. And then she goes off and gets your bras. Amazing. The service is just incredible. The bras are expensive, but I don't care.
I'm trying to imagine what kind of training these people have gone through in order to just measure boobs by sight. Like,
I mean, it's quite a skill. What a superpower to have. You know, that would maybe go across brilliantly at a lesbian bar somewhere. You know, one night you say, take it. That's a great chat line, isn't it? Take your top off, take your bra off, and I'll tell you what bra size you are.
Oh, wait, so when she's doing this, you have to be, nothing's on.
No.
You're not wearing a bra, you're not wearing a top.
I still have my pants and trousers on. I didn't get completely naked. That would be really weird, wouldn't it? Yes, I did have to take my top and my bra off, so I'm naked from the waist up. And then she just sort of kind of, she looks at you, she cocks her head, and she goes, mm-hmm.
This is traumatizing for me. I'm one of those people, like, ever since I was able to dress myself, even my parents and stuff, I wouldn't let them see me naked or anything because I'm an extremely shy person. So you're just stripping waist up to this woman who then this looks at you, cocks her head, and then, like, can you tell by the angle of the cock of the head if she's, like, impressed or if, like, oh, God, this poor woman doesn't have any boobs?
She's got great game face. She was called Simona. She's very lovely, Italian, from Milan. I told her I was going to Milan in September, so we were just chit-chatting while I'm standing there half naked. I don't have any qualms, really. I've never had qualms about being naked in front of people. I've always had extreme body confidence like that. So I'm very happy to just get naked.
No, I was the one in gym class when we had to change I was able to change out of my shirt without showing any skin whatsoever. I've mastered this technique.
I always think that I'd quite like to go to a nudist beach, but the only thing that puts me off is that I've got very, very pale skin. And so putting, like, you know, suntan lotion on the bits that I expose when I've got a swimsuit is hard enough, but it's just more stuff to cover up. But other than that, I think I'd quite like to go to a nudist beach, but I never have.
How did I not know this about your personality? We are like night and day on this one.
Which makes sense, doesn't it? Because we're night and day on a lot of things.
That is true. We don't agree on many things. We agree to disagree a lot.
We agree to disagree. We agree that we share a deep love. A deep love across the Atlantic. Is that right, TB?
I have no comeback. I'm just giggling.
So there you go. So I got three new bras yesterday. So I'm my boobs are very perky today. And my nipples are centered.
And how pricey? What's the price range? You don't have to give the exact amount. Well, you're not shy, apparently.
Well, I can tell you. Do you want to know how much I paid for my bras?
I do.
All right.
I'm curious what this service costs.
They're about 100 quid a pop.
And you don't get felt up at all?
And no point. She did sort of tuck my boob in at one point. So, you know, But generally, she said that she didn't want to be invasive. So I had to center my own nipple.
No, this is take a lot of talking through the centering of the nipple.
She didn't grade me on it, so I don't know whether I did it right, but you know, she seemed okay. She did bring at one point an electric blue bra. Now, I don't know what colour your bras are, but mine are generally black, white or nude. And I did go for a navy blue one yesterday, so that was a little bit different. But she bought an electric blue one, and as soon as apparently my poker face is not very good, because as soon as she brought it in, I must have just like made a face, because she went, "Okay, I can see from your face that you don't like that one."
Well, from my experience, when like we've been at the pub and you're unhappy about something, you have zero poker face. I'm always like, "Uh-oh, scrunchy face. How do I fix it? How do I fix it?"
So there you go. So that was my exciting. What a day I had yesterday. Sarah Waters, centering of my nipples.
I wish you would have told Sarah Waters about the centering of the nipple. I mean, she writes lesbian fiction. She might be able to. This is useful information for this podcast. We could just do a whole episode on how to buy a bra.
And I think maybe, you know, in my next lesbian romance, there might be some centering of nipples going on.
I would be very disappointed if you did not include this real life experience.
I should actually, shouldn't I? That would be a great meet cute, wouldn't it? If you fall in love with your bra fitter.
Is that allowed, or is that like a major taboo? Like, what a disadvantage. She already knows everything about at least half of your body right away.
She's seen the goods. Anyway, let's move off my bras and my nipples and get on to this week's question.
I have to admit, I didn't expect this turn.
I did tell TB at the beginning that I had a good story to tell, but even she didn't expect it to be this good, did you?
I think my face is bright red.
It is, it really
and
is.
And I wasn't even the one getting naked.
You weren't even the one stripping off in Mayfair yesterday. Right, so this week we're going to be talking about lesbian fiction book covers. So we're going to be talking about our own and how we get them done, but also the state of the nation, the state of the lesbian fiction book cover nation, which I've got to say is like a roller coaster. Would you agree, TB?
Yes, it's either hit or miss, really.
There's no in between. So let's talk about our book covers, first of all, before we get on to the state of the nation. So what's your process for your book covers, and do you use the same cover artist?
I have used, no, I was going to say two cover artists, but that is a lie, because I've also used, that doesn't sound very polite, especially since I'm going to mention Harper Bliss's wife. I can't say I used Harper Bliss's wife, can I? My apologies, Harper. Caroline, she designed the cover for Bits, our Christmas, why can't I think of this? Life in Bits. Oh my god. Do you ever like forget your own book titles? I literally had to turn around and look up my bookshelf to remember the name of the book. But she also is designing the covers for our Village Romance series, since they have to have the same feel. So I've used three cover designers. The first one I found, I think I went to a popular indie author who also writes how-to books and everything. And so I contacted this one cover artist. And I liked his style, but it was not hitting the right marks because he was more into action. I think he did a lot of book covers in the beginning for Joanna Penn. So I changed to Erin, who does the majority of my book covers now. She's redone the ones that this other gentleman did. Because one of the things you can do, which is really brilliant, because you have control over what your book covers look like, is if you want to freshen up a book, or if you want to, like, if it's been on the market for a bit, you can slap a new cover on. You can have a new cover made, slap it on, and it does help with visibility and everything. But I should mention, like, you asked what my process is like. I email Erin when I say, here's my book title. Here's a brief synopsis. I have absolutely no idea how to visualize this. I have no creative skill on this level. And she'll be like, all right, so do you want this or this? And I was like, run with it. Are you more in control of what you want your design to be? Because I can't picture it.
I'd prefer it if the designer would just come up with it. Because I think a bit like you, I'm words, not pictures, basically. So I'm a bit challenged when it comes to that. I think it starts off with me giving some pointers, but then I think generally the designer runs with it, and then they might actually come up with something that I hadn't thought of, and I think it's great. So, for instance, with You're My Kind, I just said to her that there's a lot of cake in it. So she just put a cake on the cover, which worked. And she knew that I don't like photographs, so she knows to go for the graphic style. And a bit like you, I've used three, because Caroline Harper's Wife did the cover for Once Upon a Princess, and she's doing the Village Romance. But I have two main cover designers that I still use today. So I've got my friend Kevin, who does all my, he did all my early stuff, and he does my London Romance series, and he did the All I Want series. And then I have another book designer that I got through, I'm a member of the Alliance of Independent Authors, which is like an authors union, and I got a cover designer through that. She's called Rachel Lawson, and she is brilliant as well. So, and she's done the cover for Nothing to Lose, Twice in a Lifetime, and You're My Kind. And basically, I wasn't gonna use a different cover designer. I would have just stayed with my friend Kevin, but he couldn't do Nothing to Lose. He didn't have space in his schedule. So that's why I asked Rachel to do a cover for me. And I actually like now having two different cover designers, because it's nice to get a different perspective. They all understand the Claire Lydon brand, I suppose, which is illustrative.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. You have to get a designer. It's like when you choose an editor. You have to get a designer that understands your brand. Mm-hmm. It doesn't want to change you too much. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be a hard job, because you get someone like me who's like, well, here's the title of the book, and this is what it's about. Now, do something nice. But they also have to take in the fact that they do look at your previous covers, and they try to stay on brand. And so when you want to do, like, a redo, like, when I redid, I think the A Woman Lost cover, I had to redo a few of the covers because they all had to still be kind of similar. And it was a good investment because it did increase sales for a while. They have to visualize everything, and they can't inflict their own personal choice, which would be kind of hard, because designers, I mean, they're creatives, and creatives kind of always think they're right.
I think generally I have to be able to trust my cover designer, and I do trust both Kevin and Rachel, and Caroline as well. If you trust somebody to, they know your brand and they're going to run with it, there's always going to be a little bit of back and forth. You know, for instance, both my cover designers, both my regular ones, have, you know, sent me covers that I've just said, absolutely not. So, you know, and I think that's a key thing as well. You won't get it right first time. It's like doing a book. It's like doing a book edit. You wouldn't put out the first draft of a book. And normally the first draft of a cover is not going to be terrific. My designers will give me at least three choices. Or if they can't come up with one, they'll say, okay, what about this rough? And then if you like it, I'll run with it. But it is a bit of back and forth. Sometimes I'll just email them and give them, give them a synopsis of the book. If it's my friend Kevin, obviously he's my friend, so I can go out for a drink with him and just sort of explain the story to him. And then he goes off and does it. I think with the London series, so when I first launched London Calling, I didn't really understand what covers had to do. So this is another key thing that a lot of people don't understand, and that's why there are a lot of bad covers in lesbian fiction and just in general fiction. So a cover has to tell the reader what genre your book is in and what they can expect to find inside. So if I'm a lesbian romance author, which I am, amazing. So if my book isn't a lesbian romance, I'm not going to put somebody dripping in blood with an axe on the front, because that is not saying... that is kind of saying this is going to be a bit gory, and that's not what my books are about. My books are about fluffy unicorns and love, so my two favorite things, and nipples, the occasional nipple being centered.
Centered.
Not off center, everyone, but it's central. My original cover for London Calling was kind of like a graphic of the London skyline, and it didn't say lesbian or romance, either of those two things. And so actually, even though it was quite a nice, tasteful cover and a lot of people liked it, it didn't say what it should. It didn't say, I am a lesbian romance book. It kind of said, when people glanced at it, a lot of people thought it was a travel book. So people who didn't know it was in the lesbian romance genre. So when I realized what a cover had to do, and to be honest, I probably didn't realize this until at least 5 or 6 books in, then I decided that I would redo the London series. And with a series, you should always make the books look like they're in a series, so they should be related. There should be similar things on the covers. So my London series now has the same template. And actually, designers really like that because it's a lot easier for them to then go off and create a new one because you've already got the template there. So my designer, Kevin, came up with I told him that I want it to be lesbian romance-y. I told him I wanted silhouettes I told him what each of the books were about, and then he just came up with different covers for all the ones and a colour palette for the series. And so that really works. So I redid London Calling, and I redid This London Love, and I redid A Girl Called London. And now those covers are good to go. Not that the first ones weren't, but they weren't connected. They didn't look like they were in a series.
Now you give more direction because you said, you know, I wanted it to have silhouettes and everything. I don't even do that. I think I drove my cover designer, Aaron, poor Aaron. Aaron, if you're listening, I am still very sorry about this incident I'm about to share. There was one book that, usually I'm not very picky about them because I trust the designer, but there was one aspect of the hidden one I wanted to focus on because it included a picture of a Boston Terrier. And there's a Boston Terrier in the series named Grover, after Grover Cleveland, of course, because I'm a history nerd. The reason I wanted the picture of the Boston Terrier on the cover is because Grover is the only character in any of my books that is based on a real life, I can't say person, because it was based on my Boston Terrier, Miles. And when I was writing this series, I included Miles in this book, and Miles was quite a character. And when I was publishing the first book in the series, unfortunately, Miles passed away. And I was devastated by this. And I almost took Grover out of the book because I just couldn't handle it. But I left him in, and the readers really loved him. So I made Grover a bigger character in the second book, as you do with lesbian romance. You include a Boston Terrier. So I wanted his image on the book for the second book. Aaron and I were going back and forth. And I think I'm embarrassed to say this, after the 9th version, I got an email that said, "Dear Miss Markinson," and I was like, she just dropped my last name. She never drops my last name. I'm in trouble. We could go with this cover.
Another thing about covers is that people think that they have to absolutely reflect the story, and they don't. Like, you know, if you've got a woman on your front cover, say, for instance, and she's got dark hair and your lead character's got red hair or blonde hair, it doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about that. It's just to give the reader an inkling and a taste of what's inside. And also, don't get too bogged down with detail, because really, on Amazon or on any platform that you're selling it on, the covers are really small. And so it's got to be able to pop as a thumbnail image. And that's the key thing. I think that's something that you learn as you go along. I think with my first few books, I was more bogged down with the detail. And you see, having said that, my London Calling cover, the first one, that looked like a travel book, it actually did, it sold well. And that cover really did pop as a thumbnail because it was just very bold.
Yeah, I can still picture it in my head, actually.
Because
It was everywhere and I hated you for a while.
She loves me now. And also, I think there are marked UK and US differences. Now, this is something we can't take advantage of as indie authors. But if you're published by like one of the big 5 traditional publishers and they publish you in the UK and US, which are the 2 biggest book markets, of course, the rest of the world buys books as well. So don't forget them. But they'll normally give you a different book cover in the US and the UK, because the expectations of readers there are different. So this is something we can't take advantage of as indie authors, because you can't put different covers on for different territories. But that would be interesting if that ever did come to pass, wouldn't it?
It would be. And also, don't some of the publishers, they have, if they're publishing a book in America, they'll use American spelling. And if they're publishing a book in Britain, they'll change it to the British spelling.
Yeah, I'm sure that does happen as well. Yeah. When you're thinking about doing, if you're doing a book and you're thinking about doing your cover, just think about what message you want to get over with your cover. And if it's a lesbian romance, make sure it's romancy. Make sure it's the right colours. You know, don't have it black. That's not very romantic. Have the right fonts. Say, like, swirly is good. And have an image that says, inside this book is rainbows and love. Similarly, if you're doing a thriller, don't have rainbows and love on the cover, because that will confuse people. Have thrillery things on the cover. What are thrillery things? Do you know?
Lightning bolts? I'm thinking fantasy, aren't they? Or, like, Greek mythology.
Frowny faces? I don't know.
Frowny faces, or maybe, like, a hatchet? A knife dripping blood? A gun? Gun?
Guns are good, yes. Not generally in life, just for thriller covers. Darkness, isn't it? Darkness is normally... We can tell read a lot of thrillers, can't you?
Also, since you were giving some advice, I don't recommend doing what I did in getting too invested in your cover, because that experience was not good. And I should have trusted Aaron more and walked away. It took a while for us to get back on the same page.
And she's still
don't get invested, too invested.
No, she's still your cover designer, so well done, Aaron. That's a very good point. Trust your designer to do the job that you've employed them for, because it's not your strengths, it's not your skill set. You've written the book. Give as much advice, but also when you're going back and forth, always remember that, you know, they've got feelings and they're a person. So just phrase things to your designer well, because, you know, you don't want to upset them, and you want this to be a good working relationship. So don't go in like a bull in the china shop. Okay, so let's get on to the state of lesbian fiction covers. So TB, if you had to sum up the state of lesbian fiction covers at present, how would you sum it up?
I look at the covers every week because I put together the iHeartLesbic new releases newsletter. And there are some weeks where I'm like, hey, you know, the covers are hitting the right marks this week. And then there are some weeks where I am like, what were you thinking? I know it's another expense. I understand. Being an indie author, you do have expenses that you have to factor in when you want to produce a fine product. A quality product. And so you need editors, proofreaders, cover designers. And sometimes people try to skimp on the cover design and they think, you know, they can go in. And then there are some authors who can make their own covers and they're decent. I wouldn't have known until they told me they made their own covers. But there are others where I'm like, what is this? I don't understand. Like, I can look at the cover and I have absolutely no idea what this book is about. I have absolutely no idea what the genre is. It's like they just took one of their favorite photos that they've taken on their holiday and slapped it on the cover, and they're like, this is perfect. And no, it's not. It's not perfect. And as an author, as an indie author, I take offense sometimes to some of these covers because it's not just representing the author, it's representing the genre. And when everyone's like, oh, lesbian book covers are terrible, it's impacting all of us. Sometimes it just pisses me off when I look at the covers and I'm like, you didn't even try.
Mm. No, I agree. We should say that there are a lot of good covers in lesbian romance as well. And there are a lot of people that do put a lot of time and effort into it. So we appreciate those. Like you say, because they are representing the whole genre, we want the quality of lesbian fiction to be constantly on the rise. That's with editing and covers. However, there are some publishers and there are some authors, independent authors, who don't employ the services of a cover designer, clearly. And I just think, why would you? Because the old adage, people do judge a book by its cover, it's so true. It's really true. There are quite a lot of surveys out and people always say that the blurb matters more than the cover, but I think that they probably matter equally, and people do judge books by their covers. If you can't go to the trouble of creating a decent cover for your book, then I won't go to the trouble of reading it. And that is how I look at it. And I'm sure I can't be the only person who does that. So I always go to the trouble of employing a professional to do my covers, because I wouldn't dream of doing it, because it, as I said, it's not my skill set. And I just really think that people need to think that and look at the long term of your book and how much it's going to sell with a shitty cover. The sins against covers are myriad when it comes to lesbian fiction covers. People use the wrong fonts You can't see the person's name. They use some, like you say, a bad photograph that they've taken on holiday or some bad clip art. They slap it together in a program like Canva or PicMonkey or something like that. That when they shouldn't be doing that, they should just be getting somebody professional to do it. And the thing is, if you think that you can't afford a book cover, I think you should think again, because can you afford not to? That's my question. And if you can't afford a made-to-measure one, the thing is, covers aren't that expensive, and you can get a pre-made cover. There are a lot of sites out there, if you do research, with a pre-made cover. You can buy those for like $50. So it's not that expensive to get a decent looking cover. So I would encourage everybody out there to at least, you know, if you can't afford a made to measure one, have a look at the pre-mades, because there are some great ones of those around as well.
Yeah, and I don't want it to seem like we're just bashing lesbian fiction covers, because this is, I just spend more time looking at lesbian fiction covers for iHeartLesFic. But whenever I do look at other different genres, there, you know, it's not just lesbian fiction that's doing this. There's other genres that are, they're just not investing into a cover designer. And I'm sure maybe the other authors in that genre are also like, get slightly irritated as well. So I'm not just bashing lesbian fiction covers, but since that is our wheelhouse, we do spend a lot more time looking at lesbian fiction covers. And like you said, you're not only investing in that particular book, you're investing in your career. So you are shorting yourself twice.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's not just an issue in lesbian fiction. It's an issue across the board, as more and more people do indie publishing, which is great. We're all for that. But we always just say, get your book professionally edited and get your book a professional cover. And these are just like, they're non-negotiables, really. It's like centering your nipple and meditating. I wouldn't do this those at the same time. But like we say, there are also some fantastic lesbian fiction covers out there. And the key thing is as well, is just to have a look at what's doing well. Because if you're stuck for an idea for a cover, maybe you can just have a look at what's doing well and then, you know, take some inspiration from that.
Yeah, I would study the covers. I did that before I started shopping around for a cover designer as well. Study the covers, study the authors who generally have good covers and their book sales reflect that. You can tell. You have to spend time. It's one of those things, because when you're an indie author, and it's not just the indies who are doing this, as some publishers as well aren't hiring cover designers, but you have to learn different things. You know, even, I don't have any design skill. I've made this clear. But I can still look at a cover and decide, yeah, I like that. That looks nice. I would pick that up off the shelf. I can still do that, even though I can't match my color socks or whatever. But I can still do that level. And so if you go and you can look at book covers and say, you know, that looks nice, that looks nice, that looks nice. So when you do go approach a cover designer, you can give examples of certain covers that you like in certain styles. You don't have to have a vision for yourself, but at least they can know what you're sort of aiming for.
Yeah, and it's always good to just give the designer some sort of tips about what they about the style you like and you can follow. So, yeah, that's a really good tip as well. Just have a look at the ones you like, keep a note of them, and then say this is kind of the feeling. You want your cover to evoke a feeling in the mind and the heart of a reader. As I say, I always want to invoke rainbows and butterflies and unicorns, and I hope that all my covers do that. Having said that, I will say as well that the All I Want series, that's a series that I want to recover, because I don't necessarily think that screams lesbian romance. So you're not always going to get it right. But the thing is, if you don't get it right first time, and I will say that is completely my fault. Because I was the one who gave the brief to the designer and he came up with some great covers. But it was my mistake, really. And I do want to, it's on my massive list of things to do, recover the All I Want series. Because a lot of people have said to me that it doesn't do exactly what it should do. And I agree. So I've done that with the London series, and now that does say, lesbian romance, and I will get around to recovering those that series as well. But that is the beauty of being independent and doing your own covers, is that if you don't get it right first time, you can try again. And even, I think, actually, general traditional publishers probably recover books, what would you say, about every 3 or 4 years? So this is like a constant thing, that books get recovered all the time. So it's not necessarily, you might not have got it wrong. You might just want to refresh your book and give it a new look. And that is a perfectly good thing to do.
Yes, trends change. Again, if you just want to give it a new look or anything. Now, I have to say, there's one book cover of mine that Aaron did. It's for the Miracle Girl. And that cover is just stunning. And I've been to book fairs, and have displayed this book on my table. And people have walked across the room and picked up this book and said, this is the most beautiful cover. And then they asked me who the designer is and everything. That is exactly what a book cover is supposed to do.
Yes, if it makes people stop in their tracks. And that's what you want them to do when they're shopping online or in person. Your book cover should make them stop in their tracks for good reason, not bad ones.
Yes, I guess I should have clarified that. People said it was a beautiful cover. They weren't like, oh my God, what's this hideous monstrosity?
So do take all those things into consideration when you are choosing the cover for your next book. But do always remember that if you don't get it right first time, you can do it again. So that's all we've got time for this week. Join us next week when we will be discussing how to select an editor and how we work with our own. So we're going to be discussing editors.
All right. This should be an interesting one, because I've tried a few editors, and I have one that I just, she's just fantastic. But I won't share her name, because I don't want anyone else to have her.
Yeah, we're not going to share any names, because then you'll book them up. So writers guard their editors like closer than their very close family. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and join us next week for episode 20. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Lesbians Who Write. Listen in every week for more conversations on writing and lesbian fiction. And you can make sure you never miss an episode by signing up to our newsletter at lesbianswhowrite.com. Also, if you could take a moment to leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast, it would help more people to discover us. Thanks so much, and see you next time.